Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, and happy tidings all. Welcome back to yet another crazy rendition of your favorite podcast trio, myself, Sean, and Kyle. It is the EPL State of Mind, episode number two for season number three of the English Premier League, and we're back. So a weekend filled with slaughters, close matches, and shithousery always makes for a fun bit of discussion for us three here, and with an outstanding 32 goals coming out, 10 matches, eight of them coming from one. They exceeded last year's average of 28.3 per match week. So buckle up in whatever seat you might be held to or semi-seating in, because we know you're on the edge of it, and get ready for an in-depth look at the worldwide soccer news or football news and analysis of the past weekend's Premier League with your favorites, Sean, myself, and Kyle. So before we get into everything, we always have our hot news. Kyle is currently in transit on his way to the studio, obviously, because we have lives outside of this. So you got Sean and I for the first little bit here. Sean, how are we doing today?
Wonderful, man. Again, happy to be back. Really, it's been so long without it that just even the second week, it still felt so good to get up. And it helps when your team's good, because if my team sucked, then I wouldn't have the same enthusiasm right now.
Oh, no, by any means. I mean, all three of our teams currently are three of the four teams with two wins and zero losses. Obviously, it's super early in the season, but always a nice little win there. I believe this is only third time in Arsenal history that we've opened up with two wins back-to-back in the start of the season, so that's always nice.
Minuscule club.
Just a small one from a small town called London, which is in a smaller country called England. Don't know if you guys are aware of it, but it's pretty cool.
Hate to be that guy. It's actually the UK, but...
Yeah. We got it. Well, we don't even know where Liverpool's from yet. We don't know where it currently resides in terms of the UK. Is it Liverpool? I mean, you went to it, and it was a lot better than people give it credit for. And you gave us a nice description of that last year. So if you don't listen to that, if you haven't listened to that one, go back to last season. Sean gives a great rendition of his time over there in Scouse City. But... It was a good weekend for all of us. We have some more hot news, but it's still kind of regimented towards the summer and the stuff that's happening this summer and also happening for this transfer window. We do have a massive deadline day of Friday is the end of the summer transfer window. So we'll get into a couple of little hot things that are coming through the rumor vine right after we talk about some of the players who have blessed us over the years, decades even, of their prowess on the football pitch. Internationally and club, and it is notable retirements from this offseason. Sean, why don't you take us through this, and we'll get through what could be hopefully a tearless kind of moment, but I'm sure there'll be one or two shed.
Yeah, well, we'll start it off. I mean, there's some absolute legends who stepped away from the game this summer. First being Pepe from his time at Real Madrid and Porto, the Portuguese national team, three Champions League. He's a great player. Thiago Alcantara, former Liverpool player, 35 trophies in his career. He's stepping down as well. Leonardo Bonucci, but I think obviously the main guy is Toni Kroos, top goal scorer, World Cup winner, six-time Champions League winner between Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. Won the German League three times, the Spanish League four times. I mean, this guy is one of the greatest central midfield players of our lifetimes. So definitely some legends that are stepping down. And then obviously on the international front, guys who are still playing club football but have stepped away from the international stage. You want to go through that list?
Sure, yeah. So we have Di Maria. Obviously, we've talked about him before with the Copa America. He's got 35 trophies, one World Cup, two Copa Americas, including the last two tournaments that we had here. We have Ilkay Gundogan, who we spoke about last week as well. He's still playing with Man City. We have Thomas Müller, who is still playing at the club level as well. Olivier Giroud, who is one of my favorites, I think one of the most underrated strikers in the history of the Prem, or just the game in general. He is, for a short time, going to still be the international top goal scorer for France until Mbappe gets it, but he's playing right now in LAFC. You have Manuel Neuer. He's retired from international. This is a crazy number, 39 trophies. He's obviously been the modern-day goalkeeper role model for so many. We have Shaqiri, who for Switzerland is just always the silkiest and most stubborn little stump of a player that you'll ever see. quite literally just a fucking log of a stump. And then Cavani, who we haven't talked to as of late, but we obviously got into it a couple seasons ago when he was on Manchester United or returned there for a bit stint with 37 trophies. One thing I'll say before we go over the transfer deadline and pass it back to you, Sean, is since I was over at the Euros, and you probably have some similar interactions with Di Maria from the Copa, but watching Pepe from Portugal play against that Slovenia game and still be putting up the numbers, the hours, the minutes that he's playing, it was one of the coolest experiences to see a legend at his craft. It really is something special. When he walked off the field during extra time, the entire stadium was on a standing ovation because they knew that it was potentially his last game. Of course, we know how that went. They beat Slovenia in a penalty kick shootout and unfortunately lost to France in a penalty kick shootout. But what a legend.
Yeah. One of the forebearers of the dark arts. Hogwarts created a whole segment in school to address this guy. He was such a menace. Absolute shithouse extraordinaire and a little bit of a dirty fuck as well. But we love
that. Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, so we out with the, I don't want to say old, but out with the legends and in with the new. And a lot of new discoveries always happen in transfer windows. And hopefully this transfer window, we see some new discoveries or get the opportunity to see players at their full potential. Those who are either shadowed by a first string player or those who have just been recovering from injury prone seasons and is finally ready for a breakout. This first one I hold relatively close. We've talked to him a lot last season, and it's Eddie Nketiah from Arsenal. He's been in a bit of a transfer saga this summer, whether he's going abroad to a different league entirely, if he's going to Nottingham Forest. But some team that has always popped up, and Sean, I knew you mentioned before too, that we've always thought that he could go to and fit in relatively well, is another London-based team, and that's Crystal Palace. It seems like a full agreement has been in place for 25 million plus 5 million add-ons for Eddie Nketiah to be the main striker over at Crystal Palace. I love Eddie. He is an Arsenal Academy grad. This is a pure profit move. I think for his career, this is the proper step for him. I'm very excited to see him shine. I'll be interested to see if we have some type of additional clause in there. Probably not for Eddie Nketiah. I'm sure it's just straight up cash. But really exciting to see what he can do potential-wise. He came into the first side of Arsenal, the first team, over the 2020-2021 season when we were still kind of getting our form and our shape. We had our issues with Lacazette and Aubameyang, and he kind of was our free chance there. So Eddie Nketiah to Palace for 25 mil looks like it's going to happen. You want to take the next one or two?
Sure. After that, Raheem Sterling is obviously the biggest name who looks to be out at Chelsea. Enzo Maresca said basically that he thinks he's a great player. He's just not a great player for his system at this point in time. He's definitely someone that looks like he'll move before the end of the window. The only complicating matter is that he makes £325,000 a week, which puts him among the top earners in the Premier League and therefore prices him out of a lot of potential options. They're talking about loan, where Chelsea eats some of his wage bill. Definitely one to monitor before Friday at 6 p.m. And then the other one I wanted to talk about was Federico Chiesa. This link came out today that Liverpool's interested in him to bolster their attacking depth with the £15 million move from Juve. Someone who struggled a lot with injuries, but if you go back and watch the 2021, I know it's the 2020 Euros, but it really occurred in 2021. He was probably the standout player for Italy in that tournament. Unfortunately, he suffered an ACL and hasn't quite been the same player or reached those heights again, but would definitely be a move that I'm interested in, especially at that price tag. Also, the fact that Liverpool have only signed a goalkeeper who's not showing up until 2026. so any sort of immediate impact to the team would be welcome. But yeah, and then the last one, I'll just let you handle those two.
Yeah, I mean, all in all, I think we're going to get some crazy last minute deadline days, whether it's the last 48 hours or 24 hours, there's always one shocker. So make sure you stay privy to what's going on there. But one that's been going back and forth for quite some time, whether or not he's coming to the EPL or he's going abroad to Saudi Arabia, or he's going to get picked up or again by PSG, another one who is going is Victor Osimhen. So potential target for Chelsea. It seems like they're getting everybody. One thing to note here is that Victor Osimhen and Napoli has come to a potential agreement with a Saudi club for around $65 million, but that's the club level only. Victor Osimhen does not want to play in Saudi Arabia. He's been killing it in the Serie A league. The only problem right now with any team to meet a $65 million transfer fee is his wage bill. He's looking at possibly $500,000 a week, which is absolutely bonkers. When you look at what Raheem Sterling would be leaving behind for Chelsea, it's the $325,000, and he's the highest paid person at Chelsea. So that would make him the highest paid, I think, in the English Premier League at $500,000. I think that would be absolutely ridiculous. And the last one, real quick, we love him, we miss him. It's Wilfried Zaha, a possible return on loan to Crystal Palace from Galatasaray, but there are some issues with taxes, I believe, right now with him and coming back here. So that one is it would be a great rumor, but most likely not to happen within the last week.
Yeah, and keep an eye on the at the end of the deadline here. I think Brighton could acquire the entire country of Ecuador. I think that's on the table because the way that they've been moving in this transfer window, they've been spending like crazy.
Oh, it's wild. They brought in another guy today for around $30 million. So it's crazy, but they have that money, you know, it's time to pay it back, and they are in great form. Like I said, I mentioned at the very beginning of the pod that our teams are three of the four. The fourth team to be lossless or winning both games right now is Brighton. So we'll see if that will change this weekend for at least two of us, but we'll get to that and look ahead. But we had some really intense games, and I think it would only be fair to start with the craziest of all of them. And I'm going to start with the XGs just to paint a picture for everyone's mind here for this game. But this is Wolves versus Chelsea. And based off of XGs, we have Wolves 1.96 to Chelsea 1.68. Now, with that being said, Wolves win this game. Now, what happened is they absolutely got slaughtered, worse than a couple pigs on a pig farm, a couple cows, however you want to do it, or for you animal lovers, it would be like the worst snowfall and then immediate melt in the history of all weather, just to keep it a little PG for you. They lost 6-2, but they went into halftime tied at 2-2. So what's the story with this game? Well, the big ones that we have here is Maresca for Chelsea becomes the first manager in the Premier League history to see his team score 6 goals in his first away game at the helm. However, I mentioned the XGs before. Chelsea's XG overperformance of 4.31 is the largest of this season by some margin, obviously only 2 games, with Brighton and Spurs both outdoing their underlying figures by 1.75 in their victories last week and this week over Everton. But no team has managed a bigger overperformance than that through the entirety of last season either. And that's even with Newcastle's 8 goals on a 3.92 XG versus Sheffield United when they absolutely destroyed them. No one even comes close to that target. So my question to you is this a lucky win for Chelsea, an unlucky win for Wolves? What did you see in this game? And I got that as well.
I don't think it's an unlucky win by any means, or a lucky win, I should say, by Chelsea. Yeah, obviously the XGs tell the story sometimes, but yes, it was really good finishing from Noni Madueke, who had a hat trick in this game, but he was also played in and was shooting from, you know, there wasn't a lot of coverage around the box. He was shooting basically one-on-one with the goalkeeper. They were at tough angles. They were good finishes. But I don't think it was lucky. No, I think Chelsea was pretty good to me in this game. And Cole Palmer was just cutting through their defense and finding the open man who was off of Madueke to take some of these chances.
Yeah. I mean, both teams looked about even in the first half, with Chelsea just edging over the Wolves by 18% with the possession. But Wolves still had a whole 1 XG better than Chelsea. But obviously, like you said, in the second half, it was like a bit of a runaway game. To me, I think the Wolves defense, as much as you said it as well, is it was non-existent when you watch the game. It looked like they did switch to a back three. Nori was pretty much playing at the halfway line on that left side, which is where Noni Madueke was playing. So I don't know how you press a little bit further up the pitch on that left side if you're a defensive left wing back, whatever you want to call Norrie was playing at that at time, but obviously your biggest threat is coming from the left-hand side. You have Cole Palmer cutting on his left foot. You have Madueke just killing everyone over there. They were non-existing. You know, Chelsea to me looked very similar how they played against a Rodri-less City. They had nothing but time in the middle of the pitch and space to be able to switch the ball. And I think this was definitely not a lucky, fully deserved win. At the moment, my hot take for Chelsea is they look like the biggest dark horse in the top four race in the league. They look very good to me. Obviously, they haven't had more than two games like anyone. But when Maresca listens to you and I on this podcast and puts Enzo back at a double pivot with Caicedo and puts Cole Palmer as the number 10, I think you get a lot of credit for that one from last week's pod for sure. They just got to figure out what's going on with that left side of the pitch, because I don't know if you realize, I definitely didn't realize, but Mykhailo Mudryk was playing in that game and he was on the left side. So they just got to figure that out. But they have so many options. It's crazy. You got Pedro Neto who can play over there. You have Ngoku who can play over there now. And Felix got a cameo and scored. So these guys, to me, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, obviously the attacking depth is there. It's just whether or not they can put everything together. I still have a lot of questions about their defense and goaltending, but from, you know, positive signs so far from Maresca.
Yeah, absolutely. Good entertainment. Another banger of a game here is Tottenham 4, Everton 0. You want what you got there, Sean?
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to mention this really quickly while we're talking about Madueke.
Oh, yeah. This is big. This is big.
Shithouse of the week. I don't know if this is a segment that should replace hot news or not, but he wins it this week because he posts on his Instagram story, "This place is a shithole," referring to Wolverhampton. Goes out on Molineux, gets booed on every touch. Drops a hat trick on their heads. And then the post game gets asked about posting "this place is a shithole" on his Instagram story. And he follows it up by laughing and saying, "Oh yeah, sorry about that. Didn't mean to offend anyone. Ha ha." Yeah. All right, dude. We don't buy that for a minute. You're the shithouse of the week and you deserve to be it.
Take a bow, man. Not many people can get away with dropping that on an entire town that's been in the Premiership longer than he's probably been alive and then back it up. You know, it's impressive, but good to see from him. I think you're going to hear about him later on in the podcast as well. But moving right along here, we got Tottenham 4, Everton 0. Everton with a combined goal differential of, I believe it's -7 based off of their first two games, conceding 3 and conceding 4 to this time. Tottenham side who lacked finishing last week, but had nothing but finishing this week with some help, of course. Sean, take us through this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a really different, like you said, very different performance from what we saw last week, where Tottenham created a lot of chances, but just didn't have that cutting edge. Well, that was pretty much, we knew that wasn't the case 14 minutes in. Yves Bissouma with a banger. And just won, you know, over the box or outside of the box, off the crossbar and in. Son followed it up with another goal 10 minutes later. And then Romero and Van de Ven got in offensively with goals in the second half, assist for Van de Ven, a goal for Romero. I mean, just a really, you know, well put together, well crafted performance from Spurs and a deserved win. I wanted to give a shout out to Wilson Odubear, who they bought from Burnley. To me, he looked like the type of guy they've been missing for the last 8 to 12 months. A direct, pacey dribbler who can kind of unlock the space for guys like Madison and Bissouma to come in, arrive late into, and receive the ball. I think that's kind of how Basuma's goal happened. And then also, Madison got his 28th assist dating back to the 21-22 season. Only players with more assists than him in that time frame are KDB and Salah. So pretty good company.
Yeah, and one thing on that is the Wilson Odubear, he's 19 years old, in case anyone was curious on that. I don't know if you said that, but he is 19 years of age. He's a centerman from France. That's a name that I was not aware of, so apologies. I did not know your game, but we sure will shortly. I believe so. With that being said, we kind of talked about it offline here. It's Everton. They're going through a bit of a rough patch. They have Bournemouth coming up. Sean, quick yes or no, is it panic button time for Everton or no?
No, I would say it's not panic button time. I think they definitely have some issues that they need to work on. If it's possible for them to go into the market, they need some pace because they are old and slow. But they're without Jarrad Branthwaite right now. He was their best player last season, according to our boy Blake. According to a lot of people, too, not just Blake, but he's the most credible Blues source that we have. So I think once they get him back, if they're still getting worked in games, then panic. But for right now, no, I wouldn't press the panic button.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say to Blake is, you know, if only you had a large person that was in the middle of the pitch, that's last name is Onana, to help you out a little bit on this one. I think that's a little bit of a miss you guys are having, but
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see. Still too early. Still well too early. If you remember, I think Manchester United lost like 20 games in a row in the beginning of the season, two seasons ago, and they still did it okay. So we'll move right along to our next and our last game, or not our next one. We have one more, but it's Arsenal XGs. We'll do this one again. XGs 1.22 versus Villa's 1.81. This game was obviously away at Villa Park. I think, you know, to me, in one slight phrase, it's pure justice, right? So you can definitely chalk this win up to the soccer gods for giving Ollie Watkins a bit of amnesia in front of the net and then helping Raya somehow become part mountain lion for Ollie Watkins' second header or his second attempt. And what a save that was by Raya to have such pure reflexes like that. But to me, if Watkins scores that first goal and it doesn't get called back, which I don't believe it should have or would have gotten called back for a foul on Gabriel, I don't think Arsenal wins this game. I think it's potentially possible that we tie it, but I don't think we win that game if Ollie puts that away and Villa goes up on us 1-0, which is shown in the XGs. But I say it's pure justice because, like we talked about last week, Arsenal outperformed Villa in both matches last year to XGs of 1.64 to 0.94 and then 1.40 to 0.57. So not allowing them to get one full XG in those games. So to me, it's fitting. Obviously, a pure justice would be we do the double over them this year. So we'll see. But Sean, I think you and I were talking almost throughout the entirety of that game. And you were right, man. This guy, this kid, Morgan Rogers, age 22, from West Bromwich and then Man City's development teams, is something special. He's a 6'3" powerhouse that caused nothing but problems with the ball at his feet, cutting down, not the wing, not the sides, the middle of this pitch for this game. He gave Gabriel problems. He gave Thomas Partey problems. He was a big issue, but Arteta, I think, knew that early on and before the game, because he actually had Gabriel man mark him and follow him throughout the pitch wherever he got close to our Brazilian back. So really, really great season last year. He had 3 goals and 2 assists in only 11 Premier League appearances, which is a big reason why they're comfortable with Diaby going out to Saudi. But what else do you have on this guy? And then I'll talk about my last two thoughts here.
Yeah, so I mean, my initial knowledge of him started as the guy that I would go buy on loan or get on loan in FIFA Dynasties when I was like the worst team. I go get him from City's Academy. He had no face, and I'm like, who is this guy? He's an absolute stud. but then he, you know, he balled out for Middlesbrough last year, got a move to Villa right at the end of the winter deadline. I think it was around like eight to 10 million, something like that, which was an absolute steal. And like you said, he's just kind of come in and shown really promising signs dating back to last season. He was productive in a few starts. And then, I mean, this game, I mean, it was his coming out party, really. The amount of times he turned Declan Rice and Thomas Partey inside out in this game was numerous, too many to count, which is saying something. Those are two of the best defensive midfielders in the Premier League, and he made him look average. And I think the thing that stood out to me, I mean, we see pace all the time. It's the power that he moves with the ball, like you said, through central areas. A lot of times when we're talking about, you know, someone with pace and dribbling, they're playing on the wing. This is, like you said, he's coming right through the middle of the heart of your defense, driving through guys, holding players off, you know, creating opportunities for his teammates. I can't say enough. I was really, really impressed with how he played in this match.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing much to say other than this guy is going to be a player to watch out for the rest of the season. Kyle, welcome, my friend. How are you doing? Kyle has joined us here.
I made it. Through the thunderstorm, through the torrential rains, through all the bullshit artists on the road, we got here.
And you know what that says to me, Kyle?
What was that?
You know what that says to me? It says that you got heart, kid. You got heart. And that's what we want on this.
Yeah, you know, throw me in the prem, I'd thrive, no doubt about it, for about 4 minutes on the field until my knees give out. But there would be no lack of heart. That's for sure.
And we'll wrap up the Arsenal Villa game real quick. My last couple thoughts on this one is if Martin Ødegaard is not already the best CM in the league, he will definitely be without a debate by the end of the year. To me, him and Saka are 1 and 2 with non-replaceable players. This game is a perfect example because if you take Martin out of this game specifically, I think Arsenal lose this by 2, by potentially 3. We definitely don't score 2 goals. We definitely don't come close to the net. His vision and skill with the ball and be able to keep it in such tight spaces is class. It's world class and it's pure joy. He led the game with chances created, passes into the final third, touches for the attacking players. Because defenders typically have the most touches in the game, specifically on a very possession-heavy based team. But he had the most touches for attacking players with 64, and he had the most expected assists in the match as well. So I think Martin is someone that we got to make sure that we keep tabs on for his development. And then last thing here is Joran Timber. I think this is I called it last week that we were going to play him over Zinchenko. We've been saying that Arsenal needs a better Zinchenko defense-wise, but can still possess the ball and be inverted. And that's exactly what Arteta brought him in for. And you look at how he played that inverted left back. He played a double pivot there with Thomas Partey when he had the ball. And when he didn't have the ball, he locked down that left side of our defense. So really impressive game overall from Arsenal to keep patience, to keep a clean sheet, and get a win that we desperately needed to make our stamp on this title run this early on against the top four team from last year. And then our final game that we highlight over here, I'll let Kyle, you and Sean take this one. It's Brighton 2, Manchester United 1. This had a bit of a roller coaster of a game and ended in probably the craziest fashion. But Sean, why don't you take this and then Kyle, give us your thoughts and your feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. So a game that we highlighted going into the weekend, we thought it would be a good one and it turned out to be for sure. Very even match to me in terms of what I saw in this one. I would say Brighton probably had just slightly better of the play, more shots on target, a couple more touches in the box, and the XG was in their favor as well. But the game, I would say just overall from a high-level view, obviously the one of the big points is Danny Welbeck scoring, getting a nice sliding touch on a Matoma cross, kind of similar to the goal Matoma scored in their opening game against Everton. It was Welbeck's 100th career club goal and his 5th against his boyhood club. It's the most by an ex-Manchester United player against the club, which, I mean, if you think about it, most of the best players on United stay for the most of, you know, the prime of their careers, and then they move on. He was somebody who moved kind of to get an opportunity, moved to Arsenal, then to Watford. I think he might have spent some time somewhere else, and now he's at Brighton and done pretty well. But good for him. And then Manchester United did really come out of the halftime break with some verve. Amad Diallo, a guy I thought looked really good last year in a few cameos, and when we talked about it with Heasley, he was concerned that he wasn't gonna get a lot of play time, but he starts this game and he equalized after halftime. Very nice counter, cuts it back onto his left foot. I think it deflected off Jean-Paul Van Heck and into the back of the net, but I thought he looked good. But Kyle, I mean, overall, what did you see from this game?
I saw a lack of defense from Man U, to be honest. I mean, it looked too easy at times. It's nice to see Matoma slicing and dicing. His assist was classy. I mean, that was a phenomenal ball across the goal, super fast. But, I mean, look at the game winner for Brighton. The guy that scored it could have let it go, and they still would have put it in the back of the net. There were two unmarked guys in the back post. That's beyond unacceptable, especially in the 95th minute when all your players are putting in full efforts. You got 60 seconds left, guys. Play the fucking game. Play the whole game. So, you know, it's a little embarrassing for Man U to fight so hard. I thought they did a great job trying to keep themselves in this game, especially after early goals from Brighton, but it's tough. I mean, you saw the faces of the guys on the bench too after that goal. They looked defeated. So, you never really want to see that. I think a key for Man U right now is they got to get rid of Antony. They need to recoup some type of money for that player, because that is a black hole on your team right now. And if you're going to convince me that he elevates the locker room, you're lying out of your teeth. I can't see him being one of the liked guys there with the type of attitude and arrogance when his production levels are bottom of the table. So there's some moving parts at Man U. I mean, Casemiro's had a decent start to the year. I didn't get to see him much in this game, but I think that's a focal point they should highlight this season. They have a world-class player. He doesn't have many more years of that.
He's talent. Not world-class anymore. He's not.
Not anymore. No. Not anymore.
I mean, come on.
He was remember that goal atrocious last year.
2020 or 2019? Phenomenal.
He went to Man U. Yeah, he went to Man U world-class, and he's currently there retired.
No chance. He's not even – I would take multiple DMs in the league over him.
Yeah, is he above or below Jorginho?
He's a better player level than Jorginho. Stop. He is not world class.
That's a crazy stat you said earlier, though, Sean. I would imagine that there has to be a player who scored more than five times against Man U who once played for them. But I guess you're absolutely right.
Where are you going to go that's bigger than Man U?
David Beckham, okay. Real Madrid. But you're not going to play.
Man U. Other than Real Madrid or Barcelona, and then you're only going to play Man U in the Champions League. So I think that's a reason for that.
I mean, Man U, and they had Van Persie for a while. No, he could have potentially done something.
I guess he could have done it before he was at Arsenal, but I don't know how that works. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting stat just to throw on there. Five goals isn't that much.
Absolutely. Those are my main takeaways. I think Man U, they just need to bolster their defense and stay in the game. Stop giving stuff up, and just they need to carry themselves like the Red Devils should. They should not be walking around frowning. They should not be melancholy on the bench. They're Manchester goddamn United. They should wear that with pride. They should be smiling, hyping each other up. It's a shell of a team. So it's they need to change that locker room. You know what would really elevate them? If they could get a player. Oh, God. Kyle Walker would be a nice addition.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Class act.
Class,
yeah, I'm sure.
You know,
I'm
just need someone like that, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure. Never mind. I'm not even going to go there. Anyways,
maybe that mentality.
Real quick, before we move on and take a quick break here before Rapid Kicks, I think we got to semi touch upon the fact one, I think the best player for Manchester United is not starting a game with Garnacho. Don't know how that's possible right now, not having your most lethal player from last season not starting. Maybe he's recouping from injury, but I talked to Heasley about this. Doesn't sound like he is. And he should have had the game winner if Manchester United didn't let up a second goal. But what a crazy moment that was when Garnacho puts in pretty much an open netter on the back left post in the second half from a very decent cross. That Xerxes initially tried to get at the middle or the near post, but Garnacho puts it across the mouth of the goal. Xerxes is still continuing his slide from his first attempt, and it hits off of the 6'4" monster's knee and goes into the back of net when it's on the line. So it hasn't fully crossed the line yet and goes in the back of net, and it gets ruled off for offsides because Xerxes was 100% offsides and touched the ball before it goes back. I've never seen that before. That was absurd. Really cool to see, but absolutely absurd. Super unlucky. Real dicey for Manchester United fans, hearts and spirit there, but crazy, crazy happening. But why don't we go ahead and Sean, did you want to move on to the next thing? I figured we'd take a quick little break here and then pop right into rapid kicks and the rest of the show.
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of good games this weekend, but we still had some that were just fun, I would imagine. We call these the rapid kicks. Close games, top goals, hot streaks, alerts, you name it, we cover it. So we will start with my boys, Manchester City, who just bent Ipswich over and gave them to Haaland. I mean, my goodness. It's his 7th career Premier League hat-trick in his 68th game, leading Man City to a 4-1 victory over Ipswich. They dominated XG's 3.37 to 0.36. And just for reference, you guys, Haaland scored his 7th hat-trick in 68 games. There's about 7 players who have done more than that in their entire time at the Premier League. We have Thierry Henry tied, or one above, with 8. We have Wayne Rooney with 7. We have, oh my God, a bunch with 8. We have Michael Owen. We have Harry Kane. We have Robbie Fowler, Liverpool legend, at 9. We got Alan Shearer at 11. And then, wouldn't you know it, Sergio Aguero taking the top spot at 12. But, I mean, the staggering number here is 7 hat-tricks in 68 games. He's averaging 1 every little bit less than 10 matches. That's absurd. So,
yeah.
I mean, great game for Haaland, great production. City did go down this game. Ipswich fought early, which is what you have to do against City. If you go down, it's trouble, especially if you're a newly promoted team. So they did their job. They got their goal early on, set the stadium, set the bar, And then, unfortunately, Manchester City decided to score 3 goals in the span of 4 minutes to take the lead back. And then they decided not to give it back up. So all around, very happy with the game. I thought it was nice to see the big names back on the score sheet. We have De Bruyne. We have Haaland. De Bruyne's back doing his stuff. I just really hope a key to this season is going to be De Bruyne staying healthy. That's going to be his big thing. And he's a center midfielder on my fantasy team, but I'm completely fine with him taking some time off against some easy home matchups, try to preserve those legs for the big games, maybe some European football. But yeah, that was my couple cents. I don't know if you guys have anything else about that game.
I mean, Sean, Kyle brought up a good point about how many hat tricks that Haaland has in 68 games. You sent this into our group the other day. The people he rattled off in there, do you want to tell us how many games it took them to achieve such feats? Because this is the staggering number to me.
Yeah, it's just insane. I think the one that stands out most to me is Thierry Henry, because when we talk about the best players to ever play in the Premier League, his name is almost always the first one included. It took him 258 games to reach that figure of 8 hat-tricks. Aguero, 275 for 12. Alan Shearer, the all-time Premier League top goal scorer, 441 matches, 11. Haaland might have this record before the end of the year, the way that he plays and the way that he eats up these smaller smaller bottom feeders of the Premier League and the good teams too. He's unbelievable. I think I sent it to you guys on Instagram. He knew he was going to score in the Chelsea game the way he did because he missed a chance last season that's haunted him for 12 months. He's only thought about this chance and how he missed it. He scored 27 goals in the league last year. He led the league by, I think, like 5 goals. This man is a cyborg put on the earth for one thing and one thing only, to put the ball in the back of the net.
Absolutely. He is a robotic Norwegian Viking mastermind magician, however you want to roll it, slice it, or dice it. It's insane. And I have sorely regretted not picking him on my fantasy team because of the pure fact that he's so damn good in a Man City. I just don't want to entertain it. But no one will win anything if you don't have Haaland on your squad. So that I know the rapid kicks express acknowledgments turned into a little bit of a Man City, but also more of a player highlight with Haaland. But it's fully deserved for such an incredible acknowledgement for that feat that he has. Absolutely incredible. So we got one more, I think, that's pretty fun, and it's just Joe Linton playing in the Newcastle game. Absolutely decides to reverse RKO the Bournemouth goalie and gets away with a yellow card somehow. Should absolutely, for the shithousery that Newcastle typically deals in the center of the pitch, he definitely should have been carded with red on that one, just sent off. That game ended in a 1-1 draw, I believe, and just that crazy, crazy bit of action there. But why don't we pop into to look ahead? We have a couple important games coming up. We have 3 teams playing very good oppositions that have 2 wins currently, and that is Arsenal versus Brighton and then Liverpool versus Manchester United at Old Trafford on Sunday at 11. Sean, why don't you take us through this at a high level real quick on your matchup? What I know we talked about earlier as always a scary matchup for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think you're a fool if you think you're just going to waltz into Old Trafford and walk out with the result. They've kind of proven in the last couple of years they are difficult to beat, particularly last season. Obviously, there was that game in 2023 where Liverpool won 7-0. I don't know if you guys have heard anything about it, but that's ancient history now. They played 3 times last year. Liverpool did not get a victory in any of those 3 occasions. 2 draws and a loss. I think it's going to be a very, very difficult game. And I actually think that there's some positives for Manchester United. Or they always seem to play better after a loss, which I hate. So I'm not confident on that front. And then the other thing is, I think that they're starting to get what their best 11 is figured out. I think we'll see Matthias De Ligt play the entire game. He's been kind of used more as a sub, trying to get him minutes into his legs, but not rushing him. I think he has to start this game. And I think a guy that you talked about before is Alejandro Garnacho. think he's going to cause problems for Liverpool's defense, particularly Andy Robertson, who, I mean, if I'm, you know, pointing fingers at anybody who's been a little bit of a letdown so far, I would say he'd probably be top of my list. So I think that's the place where Manchester United will look to attack Liverpool. But overall, I have to say that I've been impressed with how we set up. But, you know, Arne Slot can beat Ipswich. He can beat Brentford. But at the end of the day, as a Liverpool manager, you're judged on two things, trophies and what you do when you play against rivals. There's no bigger one than Manchester United for Liverpool. So this is a huge one for him, I think, to get fans on his side and potential, like we talked about last week, you know, some momentum to springboard off of. They have some very manageable fixtures, but, you know, losing this game obviously derails all of that and seeing what they can do going forward. But I think this is a real difficult game to call. Probably a draw, but obviously I'm going to pick my boys and back them no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. Great point about having Slot have a little bit more momentum on that huge, huge game. And the fact that it's not home is definitely more worrisome. Like you said, you can't walk into Old Trafford unless it's actually crumbling down, which it potentially is, but that's nor here nor there. A lot of fun games on Sunday. That's one on Sunday. I think everyone's got to keep their eyes open for the Sunday list fixtures. Very intense, very exciting. But the weekend starts off at 7:30 on Saturday, and that is with Arsenal versus Brighton. This has been a little bit unspoken ever since Brighton kind of did our potential title hoping run, not last season, but the season before that with beating us. Always a team that gives the big guys a bit of a trouble. Brighton was our favorite kind of underlying dark horse in the 2022-2023 season, rightfully so. But this game is home. It's at Emirates Stadium. It's an early one. And to me, I think Arsenal walks away with the victory on this. I'm pretty confident in it. I'm not overly confident based off of the way that Brighton are playing. But when I look at how Arsenal are playing, specifically in the back, and what we brought David Raya in for the majority of it, and what we have now on both outside fullbacks, Ben White on the right side, which is Mitoma, and then left side, which should be Joran Timber again, with it, whether or not they put Mita or Adingra out there. A vast majority of these goals from Brighton have come from, like we said before, crosses from the left side going across the box to the middle, crosses from the right side going across the box to the middle. David Raya eats crosses and balls across the box for breakfast, and our defensive line is very, very solid. Brighton have not played a defensive line as solid as Arsenal's right now, and I think it's going to be a very good game. Being home gives me a little bit more comfort, but I think we walk away with the win here, and hopefully we become one of three teams potentially at that point with two wins in the beginning of this, three wins and no losses in the beginning of the season. But it will be really intense. It will be a fun one to watch for sure, especially with the ability that Brighton have with their speed and their pace. I think we need to possibly think about not playing Thomas Partey in the middle just because he doesn't have the legs, or at least get him out of the pitch sooner, because we will be eaten alive based off of stamina that Brighton has on the sides and up top. I don't think Danny Welbeck will be too much of an issue, but of course, as soon as I say that, you know, he's just going to pop off with a hattie. But it will be a fun game. Definitely looking forward to it. I'll be watching at 7:30 in the morning. Sean and Kyle, what do you think of results for that one? I'm curious. I think, Sean, I think you're probably right that the Man U Liverpool possibly ends in a tie, but I would not be surprised if Liverpool walks away with it with your boys. Maybe a 2-1 win for you guys there. Or a 2-0 win for you guys there. I don't think Manchester United will score more than one goal if they have a goal in them against you guys. But I'm curious what you think about Arsenal.
Yeah, I think both of the clean sheets for both Liverpool and Arsenal, those streaks are going to end this week. I think Brighton definitely has the ability to cause you issues on the counter. I think we saw that, you know, a bit in the United game, but they had more of the ball than they would. Mm-hmm. You know, against an Arsenal, I just think Arsenal's got better control, much better midfield. But yeah, I think like you said, the guys you highlighted are definitely the danger men for Brighton. It's on the wings. It's Yankuba Minta and Mitoma. I don't think you can play Zinchenko in this game. Mm-mm. Because I just don't think that he has this type of solidity, or positional discipline that you need going against two very dangerous wingers. Three, you know, when a Dinger comes off the bench, and he's got to feel hard done by to not be starting. He comes in, scores last week, and then immediately goes back to the bench. He comes on late right before João Pedro scored that goal. But I just think Arsenal's midfield is a little too strong. I think Brighton's going to cause you problems, but I think a 2-1 victory sounds right to me, like you said before. I just don't think James Milner and Billy Gilmore is going to compete with a midfield trio of Odegaard, Rice, and Partey. That's just kind of how I see it.
Yeah. Kyle, what you got? Thoughts and feelings?
I agree with pretty much everything Sean said there, but I do think there's a chance, a world where Arsenal takes all 3 points here. And I think that the big factor in my head is just Arsenal's home at the Emirates. That's a huge advantage, having your fans there, especially on a game of this caliber, because you know damn well London is going to show up and they are going to be loud and they are going to force their team to get the 3 points. That being said, after watching the Brighton game, I don't see them being held to nothing. So I think if Arsenal takes 3 points, it's got to be 3-2, 2-1. They have to score goals, not goals. So I would say Brighton definitely nets at least one. If Arsenal can hold them to one, I think Arsenal takes three. If Brighton get two in, I think it's a draw. I think Arsenal will attack. I think they're at home. They're going to put two into the back of the net. But I think the key to three is to net three, honestly.
Yeah, that's fair. Good games, two very good games to watch. I know we'll be participating, but I know you all are always take our score lines and our guesses to who's going to win games to heart and to your banks and to your betting agents and bookies. But we have we've chopped the lock of the week from our podcast, and we've replaced it with something great because it's something we did last year and had a lot of participation. And it is the EPL State of Mind English Premier League Fantasy League. And if you didn't know already, we are back with season two. So this is fantastic. Last season, we had the exact number of participants as games in the Premier League season with 38 people participating in our fantasy league, which is a ton of people to begin with. And this year we did even better. We got 44 on the roster for this. It is the largest fantasy league I have ever helped run. I've ever physically really participated in. It's a great time. Last year's winner, Graham Hewitt, he won an authentic EPL team of his choice jersey, which he did, and he received a home red Manchester United jersey for his brother. I said that I would definitely make sure that it is known that he is a Liverpool supporter. He just happens to be a better brother and gave his winnings to him.
What a guy.
What a guy. What a guy, really. But really well done from Graham. Congratulations for taking the prize last year. I believe he did it with around 93 or 95 points. He was up in the mid to low 90s. Got the job done. And he is currently lossless. He is 2-0 currently in the season already, starting off very, very strong. Like 13 players are still in this league. 13 of the 44 are tied for first place with 2-0. And Sean, we get to say that you have an honor of being one of them. You are 2-0. You are the Slots Soldiers at 2-0. So well done, sir. Kyle.
Thank you.
Kyle, you are...
Kyle, who'd you lose to this week?
Why don't we just go ahead and go to...
Who'd you lose to this
week? Hotel Calafiori here.
Oh, that's right. We had an EPL State of Mind matchup early on the season. And I don't know if we'll get another one because there's 44 players. I'm sure Sean, you and I, or Kyle, you and I will match up. But... Oh, Slash Soldiers just took it to Pep Guardiola's squad. Sean, what was the final score for you guys head to head?
I'm looking at it right now, 90-77. How you doing?
God damn, Sean. Did you take the cake?
That's how I'm doing.
Hold on. I just before I go roast Kyle, I need to roast our friend Luigi for putting up a 38, which is by far the lowest score of the week. Only guy even close is some scrub named Zach Mansley. I guess being a generation is a family thing. Is that a tradition?
I mean, I'm just glad he's having fun, man.
Yeah, in Zach's defense, I actually played in a soccer game over the weekend with Zach Kyle's brother, who I played in high school with, a very good keeper. He thought this was more of like a dynasty or draft style where he was like, okay, I'm going to pick my future people to outperform, like find like some second tier players. And I explained to him, I was like, Zach, that's not how we do this here. But he's very encouraging to get back into it. It's very encouraging to get back into it. But again, I think a great name on the team, Hotel Calafiori, that's me. I'm 1-1. Last week, I like to keep it inside the family's pretty good. Sean, I think you put up the most points this week. I put up the most points last week. My team didn't perform very well this week. I lost to
me then.
Yeah, I lost to a dear friend, Paul. I mentioned him last week. I lost to him. I beat him in a different league last week, and he gets his revenge on me this week. So I'm 1-1. And one last little thing we'll do during this. Obviously, we'll talk shit to each other about who does well. We'll give everyone updates on who's in first and who's looking at relegation. But we always want to give you guys a little tidbit, maybe a little bit of an edge on what you can do in your fantasy league for the next one. So before the season started, my edge was pick up Emile Smith Rowe while he's on Arsenal before he goes to Fulham. I picked him up beforehand. His value will definitely go up. He's going to be the main man over at Fulham. He already popped in a goal this week, and he will do more as he shakes off the rust. But for next week, I have one thing that everyone should probably look into, and it's Chelsea, Chelsea, Chelsea. More specifically, the man of the weekend, Madueke Noni, that we spoke about before. He's currently on the market for $6.5 million, and Chelsea have Crystal Palace coming up at home, who have let up 2 goals the last 2 games without scoring any, and a worse Chelsea side last year put 5 in the back of net against them last season. So you really can't go wrong with a Chelsea player. If you have the funds, Cole Palmer would be obvious, but I think for the value and the fact that there's no way he's coming off the bench and he's starting for sure is Madueke at $6.5 million. I think he's going to be causing problems for the rest of the season. They also have a relatively easy fixture for the next 2 games before they go away for a harder matchup. But I think this is a good value here. And we'll rotate this and we'll get Sean's opinions on the transfer market next week and Kyle's to follow. But super excited.
And we will definitely track how many points each person gets. Competition.
Yep. This one has a little more skin in the game for us three. But I hope you all enjoy it. I hope you tell your friends about this, because this is something that we would love to carry on next season. Break 44 players. Let's get up to 75. Let's get up to 100. Let's just keep growing this. So please spread the word. It's free entry. It's too late now, obviously. All we ask is that you spread the love of the podcast. You give us a follow on Instagram, on Twitter. You like our cast on Spotify or Apple Music, wherever you have, and just continue to do what you guys do. But for this week, we end on a new segment and on a high note for Sean. Congratulations for being the victor of the three of us for this week. Really, really great performance from you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. Without further ado, that concludes the episode, and we'll talk to everyone over the weekend and talk to you on Monday next week. So enjoy, everyone.